Hello out there to all you people on the go and multitaskers everywhere. This is Homeschool Mom Movie Maven, and this review is on Incredibles 2, and I title it, And Now You Know the Rest of the Story. My short take is that this is the second act of a two-part story which began as The Incredibles in 2004. No more, no less, as delightful, fulfilling, family-friendly, exciting, and fun as the first half. Who should go? Absolutely everyone, especially if you are a fan of the first installment. Though I cannot say the same about the short in the beginning, Bow, which has nothing to do with the main movie and which you might want to give a miss. I'll explain why in a spoiler-filled review of Bow at the end of this The Incredibles 2 review, and you can also read it on my blog, the review of Bow, the spell B-A-O. Incredibles 2, the movie, is very child-friendly. Bow, not so much. Long take. And now you know the rest of the story. Paul Harvey was a radio personality who used to tell stories on air about little-known facts or anecdotes, leaving some key element out until the end, like one about a war hero who turned out to be the famous actor Lee Marvin, or why passengers on the Titanic didn't have to die, or what really happened to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, that kind of thing. So as I watched the beginning of The Incredibles 2 pick up immediately as Incredibles 1 had ended, that tagline came to mind. If you have not seen Incredibles 2 yet, please do not read any further. I don't want anything I have to say influence your fresh impression of the movie. It's bad enough trailers give away too much nowadays. I do not want to compound that affront for anyone who has not yet enjoyed the sequel to the original Incredibles. Now, for those of you who have seen Incredibles 1, read on. Or, I'm sorry, Incredibles 2. For those of you who have seen Incredibles 2, read on. Spoilers, really seriously, don't read any more until you've seen the movie. Okay, for those of you who have already seen Incredibles 2, I have a confession to make. I was just a little bit disappointed, but really it was my own fault. Please do not get me wrong, I loved Incredibles 2. It's a terrific movie. But let me give you some examples. For those of us living in the South, do you remember the first time you ever saw snow? The experience of seeing it again can never match up to the anticipation you have built up from your original encounter with the frozen fluffy stuff. Or, when you're a kid, no matter how amazing Christmas is, there is always a teensy part of you that is just a little bit disappointed that it's not as amazing as you expected it to be. Build up and eager high hopes can do that to you. 14 years worth of anticipation for a movie cannot help but handicap the real item when it finally comes along. And yes, folks, it has been 14 years since writer-director Brad Bird hatched the first Incredibles movie and introduced us to the Parr family of superheroes. All our favorite characters are back, and despite the time passage, all the voices are the same but one. Holly Hunter with her growly, lispish, Texas-twanged Helen, Craig T. Nelson, the occasionally bombastic Bob, as Mr. Incredible, Samuel L. Jackson, the smooth, crooning voice of Lucius, Frozone, Sarah Vowell returns as Violet, whose vocal mannerisms echo an individual variation on her mom, Jonathan Banks returns as Rick Dickers, the exhausted put-upon-government agent assigned to help hide the existence and whereabouts of the supers, even when they make that job very difficult. And Brad Bird, the director, writer, and father figure to the entire Incredibles universe, returns to voice of my all-time favorite character, Edna Mode, the adorably abrasive diminutive costume designer to the supers, whose own superpowers are mega confidence and almost mystical calm, extraordinary talent, and a forceful, maternal, protective, preternatural insightfulness into the supers themselves. Edna was conceived by Bird as the solution to the eternal question, since when do superpowers automatically make you a gifted tailor? Where do those awesome suits come from, anyway? And contrary to popular opinion, according to Bird himself, he did not create the inimitable E from any one or combination of real-life designers, at least not consciously. Edna is simply a mishmash of the cultures of Japan and Germany, two, he thought, countries who were very small in relation to their cultural impact. Much like Edna herself, well, small geographically compared to their cultural impact, much like Edna herself. Therefore, Edna's house decor is a combination of Japanese and German, if you look at it carefully. As is the clothes she herself wears, her odd accent, and even her personality swinging wildly from imperturbability to wildly forceful and persuasive as the occasion demands. Unfortunately, Spencer Fox Dash's boisterous reflection of his dad's commanding vocals had to be replaced with the younger Huck Milner, but you will not notice a difference. Milner does a very good job. Fox is the only one to be replaced. According to interviews and articles, the decision to, according to interviews and articles, the decision seems to have been arrived at from a combination of Fox's puberty, like in the lyrics of Puff the Magic Dragon warns, a dragon lives forever, but not so little boys. Fox's commitments with his punk band Charlie Bliss and a certain nostalgic ennui Fox had for the entire project, that it was something great he did in his childhood to which he didn't really want to revisit, were all obstacles that required he be replaced. And now for some serious spoilers, and this is your last warning. First off, calling it a sequel really isn't accurate. Incredibles 2 is actually a continuation of the first movie. Literally, we pick up in the first moment of Incredibles 2 after the last second of the Incredibles 1. The Underminer has arrived and the family Parr, the word Parr meaning average, becomes the family of Incredibles. Anyone notice the name significance before this? Very clever underscoring by Bird, I thought. The Parrs go into action as a group and avert a massive casualty list of people, but rack up a lot of collateral property damage in stopping the mammoth runaway drill. Once again, they are unjustly blamed and sent off in disgrace, reinforcing to the public through the willing accomplices and the lamestream media why supers were banned to begin with. Helen is summoned by a superhero-loving industrial magnate, Winston Deaver, voiced by Bob Odenkirk, and his sister, Evelyn Deaver, Evil Endeavor, get it? Catherine Keener does her voice. They want Helen to be the face the supers need to become accepted again. For any of you who have seen the trailer, the movie plot largely revolves around Bob adjusting to a Mr. Mom status, while Helen goes off to be the poster child for superheroes. And the fish-out-of-water aspect to the movie is wonderful, fun, touching, and eminently relatable to any parent ever. Bob trades fighting Colossus killing machines, saving people from building fires, and wrestling with supervillains for math homework, meals, and a meta-powered baby. Oh, yeah, and exhaustion. It is the genius of Brad Bird that he creates a reflection of a modern family and places it into a superhero framework. The Parrs, the Incredibles, is a fairly young family, mom, dad, children, all under 16. The children cover the spectrum too, early teen, adolescence, and infant. One of the things I believe which made The Incredibles such a universally loved movie was that people intuited the metaphor. In an interview with Bird prior to the release of the sequel, Bird makes this clear. Bob, the father, is given incredible strength, as a father must have in one way or another, physically, mentally, and morally, to the best of his ability. He must stand strong in the eyes of those he has sworn to protect. Helen, the mom, stretches in impossible ways, much like your average mother, who must be psychologist, chauffeur, chef, teacher, and judge, all while carrying a baby on her hip and breastfeeding. Dash, the adolescent, has just gotta move, so is super fast. Violet suffers the normal angst teens go through, is standoffish and sometimes wants to disappear, so has the powers of invisibility and force fields. Jack-Jack is an unknown but delightful baby which pretty much fits the description of every infant. Everyone who has ever been in a family, which is of course everyone, can relate to one or more of each of these characters, and every family has challenges and threats which come at them, against which they are best advised to confront together. In what is really only the first half of a three-hour movie and the 2004 installment of The Incredibles, Bob comes to understand he has allowed his desire for the limelight to overpower the real center stage he should be occupying, that of superhero in his own home. The kids learn their parents really are the heroes in their lives and step up to the plate to emulate and obey their parents. Together, they all learn this lesson in spades and the family is triumphant. The second half of the movie, aka Incredibles 2, puts this newfound unity, affection, and understanding immediately to the test. A familiar tune, as there is not a day goes by that the family in general is not under attack, especially in this culture. It is, if you'll excuse the pun, incredibly refreshing to have a movie where the dad is and wants to be the man of the house, but is still confident enough as the leader to step aside when that is the right thing to do, that he will do the right and manful thing for his family, even if, as in this unusual situation, he must temporarily suppress his own natural and very powerful normal drives and instincts to protect and provide for his family, to allow someone else to take point. The wife is a considerate partner, without either being submissive or dominating, conferring with her husband on important issues, but being wise enough to leave the final decision up to her husband, knowing and trusting his judgment. The husband is wise enough to put his own needs, wants, and desires aside for the good of the supers in general, sure, but primarily for his own family and his own children. The parents' first thoughts are for their children, even if it means leaving their own comfort zones or putting aside their own goals and wants. In other words, the Incredibles have their priorities straight. And their nom de plume, par the average, points out that this is and should be the structure of every successful family. That every family should aim for this healthy, functional dynamic, and that this is a wonderful thing to see. I do have a few quibbles with the plot. This is not meant to be a negative, but a hope that the next movie will be even better. They may be small quibbles, but they did have a long 14 years to think of a script, and it seems that some of these things could have and should have been worked out. The first one dates back to the first installment. Jack-Jack got away from Syndrome because he expressed some heavy-duty powers, turned into a monster, caught fire, became metal, but at the end of the first movie, no one knows he has powers. And in the beginning of the second movie, Bob is shocked that Jack-Jack has powers when he starts to display them, and Helen later makes it clear she didn't know either. None of them saw any of what Jack-Jack did to Syndrome. Granted, it was a traumatic moment. They were pretty high up in the sky, but the Parr family is used to crises, and they have superpowers. Not to mention, there is a absolutely hilarious short with the babysitter wherein she mentions that some strange things have been going on. You think they would have put two and two together. Number two, their living arrangements. Their house is destroyed by Syndrome's crashing plane. At the end of the first movie, some time seems to have gone by. Violet makes headway with Tony, gets noticed. He asks her out on a date. Dash has accepted he must restrain his abilities, and the family has developed a certain code with him about holding back at events like track meets. There seems to have been some time to adjust, become comfortable with their newfound unity, and must be living somewhere. But when we see them in the beginning of the second movie, they are still living in a second-rate government-sponsored hotel. 3. The Parrs at the beginning of Incredibles 2 are broke and unemployed. Bob can't get a job as a security guard, a bank teller, a dock worker, Secret Service. They've already run through the insurance money for their house. And don't tell me Bob wouldn't have had insurance to cover the unlikely eventuality of a plane falling on his house. He worked for an insurance company. 4. The no-show supers were never addressed. Why did Gazer Beam and Dynaguy not answer the Deavers' phone when they were under attack? Were they already dead at Syndrome's hands? The parent Deavers were elderly, and the siblings only barely seemed to have had time to adjust to running the company, so maybe a year or two had gone by? So the timing would be about right. If so, why did no one explain that to Evelyn? The supers who did not come to their parents' aid were likely dead, and ironically, at the hands of Syndrome, someone who, like Evelyn, wanted to depower the supers for their own selfish, short-sighted reasons. So ultimately, Evelyn had no reason to be angry at the supers. 5. I find it odd that none of the superheroes questioned the motives of yet another mega-rich entity interested in hiring them. Wasn't the last movie about exactly that? Granted, it turned out that Winston was the real deal, but aside from Lucius assuring them Winston was on the up and up, and after a single interview, no doubts are shared or intentions dissected or research done by any of a group who should have been extremely sensitive to this scenario, coming so close in the heels of a very similar one from which they had just finished extracting themselves by the skin of their teeth. More of an observation than a critique, this is also kind of a dark movie, more so than the first. Whether you like it or not, and I did like it, there is an element of reality infused into this kids' movie. People do die. Ethical and legal debates are had around the Parr dinner table, and there are complex cultural issues to wrestle with, along with physically fighting bad guys. Now, granted, it seems as though Incredibles 2 has matured over the last 14 years from Incredible 1, and they recognize probably that the demographic that loved Incredibles 1 had matured 14 years, but there was a whole new generation of children to see both of these. It is ultimately a child's movie. Much like the Sokovia Accords in the Avengers universe, the ban on super smacks of an unjust legalese stemming from an urge to place blame on the easy marks of superheroes instead of the real villains. Gee, that sounds familiar. It is easier to rein in people who willingly abide by and enforce the law than it is the criminals who break them. The issue of breaking a law in civil disobedience and leaving her family to save it are ironies which are discussed and will be of interest to the adults in the audience, but will go over the heads of most of the youngsters. Bird himself said in an interview that he eschews the term kid movie, but simply makes animated films he would enjoy seeing. His is obviously a winning prescription, but it makes for a movie which might lose the attention of younger viewers in places. Which talk of Sokovia Accords and the ban of supers brings me to the real villain of The Incredibles. It's not really ScreenSlayer or even Evelyn. It's the media. In the aftermath of the Underminer escapade, which bridges the two movies, the visual presence of the Parr family as Incredibles in the Mountain of Rubble is not portrayed as heroes mitigating and managing a catastrophe for minimal damage, but as the cause of the mess. And they never mention how many lives they saved. Sadly, these typical talking heads, the real villains of both movies and real life, are the same media who defined Mr. Incredible in the 2004 movie not as a rescuer, but as someone who ruined a disturbed man's attempted suicide. This is a typical example of how news bias and fake news reports are fashioned. A classic example of what happens in the real world to give their audience not news, but their own prejudiced views. These real evildoers are never showcased as such. That might have been an interesting aspect to pursue, especially as it ties in with the bad rap the heroes and the Avengers got in Captain America: Civil War from the misguided and grossly civil rights-violating Sokovia Accords. But while we see the news people at work either blankly vape it or ginning up anger toward the supers without the excuse of being hypnotized, no serious criticism is ever laid at their feet where that blame belongs. In an interesting note, the actors who voice the main characters, Holly Hunter, Craig T. Nelson, and Samuel L. Jackson, are given a small intro at the beginning of the movie mentioning how grateful they are for the patience of the audience over the past 14 years and how glad they are to be working together again as this family of supers. I thought it was very sweet. 14 years is not a small span of time, and both Ms. Hunter and Mr. Nelson are not exceptions to reflect this span of a half generation of years between movies. I only mention this because, strangely, Samuel L. Jackson does not look a day older than when he did the year the first Incredibles movie came out. He is in many superhero universes as well. The Avengers, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Nick Fury, Mr. Glass, and Shyamalan's alternate super universe, and here is Frozone, as well as super, almost indestructible characters in movies like The Hitman's Bodyguard. And the actor, much like most superheroes, never seems to age. Is there something you're not telling us, avid superhero fans, Mr. Jackson? In conclusion, on The Incredibles 2, I just want to say please do not wait another 14 years to do a follow-up film. We want to know more of the rest of the story. And just to follow up on something I mentioned at the beginning of this article, I have another review on Bao on my website, which you can also get by audio. Just go on the website and click on audio, or put audio into the search engine, and then look for Bao in the list. Or you can just type Bao, B-A-O, into the search engine and you'll pull it up. It is not a child-appropriate movie at all. Please do not show that to your kids, whether you're seeing it somehow on the movie theater or on a DVD or streaming. But The Incredibles 2, absolutely. And remember, if you're listening in your car or on an iPhone, you can get the full original review, including pictures and links, at www.homeschoolmommoviemaven, that's Maven spelled M-A-V-I-N.com. And take it from a homeschool mom. Education doesn't always have to come from a book. Sometimes it can come from finding out the rest of the story.